Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi there, I'm Ethan Palmer of the Lore Boys. Thanks for listening. With Halloween coming, we decided to do a couple of extra special spooky episodes for you guys. But we wanted to give you the heads up that this episode contains pretty graphic descriptions of violence. If that's not your thing, we'll be back to normal in just a few weeks. If that is your thing, then enjoy. With Halloween coming
up. Yeah, my neighbor, the supercomputer, put blades in my fucking gazelles. Gorebones here, bringing you another disturbing trademark Halloween trademark episode. Brought to you by Goldner Tinned Peaches, official tinned peaches of the Lore Boys podcast. Goldner, we sealed our cans with lead. My name is Peter O'Donohue, the only living thing whose natural habitat is hot water, and I am joined with...
Ethan Palmer.
That's me. And Jimmy Mustard Mitts Miller.
Jimmy, do you want to tell people the Mustard Mitts story? Before we get into it.
Yesterday, I was washing a dish after making a sandwich, and the mustard and dish soap were next to each other, and I used mustard to wash my hands instead of soap.
Okay.
It was a classic mix-up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I've done the same with the sulfuric acid I keep next to the sink.
You got to commit to it, though. You can't go to the soap afterwards, because then they know you won.
Yeah, yeah,
or
exactly.
They won,
yeah,
rather.
Exactly.
It's a classic vaudeville cliche to swap the dish soap with the... in the silent film era... Buster Keaton did it all the time to whoever was the antagonist of Buster Keaton shit.
I feel like Jamie's whole life is kind of like a vaudeville cliche, though, you know, in a lot of ways.
He moves very fast, yeah. Mostly in black and white.
Yeah, very frenetic. He doesn't speak, but signs with words he wants to convey appear in the air between sentences.
Yeah. Wears eyeliner, runs from the cops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hangs from clocks.
Every time I leave a room, someone plays me out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So today... on another October-branded episode of the Lore Boys podcast, the internet's number one fake history podcast, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. If you ask the internet. The internet voted, and they all agree. This is the number one fake history podcast out there.
Fuck yeah, yep. Idiots. Mm-hmm.
That
thanks.
That was also fake, but it's part of the experience. Part of the fake history.
Everything we say is completely untrue. So today we're going to be talking about I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. Both the 1968 short story and the 1995 adventure game. So I'll start with similarities, then the characters, the character by character basis and differences, as well as a little bit of stuff about the author. Mm-hmm. So, I know I've talked about it just with you guys, like behind the scenes, the Hollywood magic, mm-hmm. but, do you guys know anything about, the author or the book or the game?
So,
Jamie, I'll start with you.
Oh, go ahead, Jamie.
Nothing.
Go ahead,
absolutely
Mustard
Mitts. Nothing.
Perfect.
So you can go ahead, Ethan, because I don't know what we're getting into.
It's a goose egg from Mustard Mitts. How about Ethan?
Old Mr. Meatball over here. I got to say, this one's pretty fresh to me because I have a mouth and I very rarely, if ever, feel the need to scream.
Okay.
So
the first spoiler is that it's a short story and not a survey. So that...
okay.
That answer's not going to be relevant, but we'll learn a few.
Is it a short story in the form of a Yelp review?
yeah.
For a dentist who removed somebody's mouth?
I'm going to say yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
Lord was kidding. Yeah. There's your fake
one
history, star.
Folks.
Yeah. The dentist satisfaction review afterwards is always given by speech, so he has a perfect score because no one can speak poorly against him.
It's always oral. Yeah. Although Jamie, it doesn't bother Jamie at all because he has the power to make words appear to convey what he's trying to express, like a vaudeville hero.
Yeah,
yeah.
This isn't my real voice. This is a paid voice actor reading my
reading
lines this whole time. Yeah.
I thought it would be like a vaudeville text-to-speech engine where you just input the slide from the film reel and then it just, like, speaks out for you. Why, I've run afoul of an Irishman. And then it's just like, yeah, there's Jamie. Yeah.
But Jamie is the Irishman.
So, first, we'll talk about Harlan Ellison, the author of I Have No Mouth, which is just going to be the short form that I use going forwards. Turns out this fucking crazy name, Harlan Ellison, is his real name. It's not a pen name. It's not anything like that.
Is it that crazy?
Harlan?
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay, fair, fair. We got Pete's opinion.
Harlan Ellison is a weird name. He was born in Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, so it's foreign and scary to me.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Cleveland, Ohio is a scary place.
He was born in 1934, the scariest version of Cleveland, Ohio, I think. which is actually just like my mom. My mom was born in Cleveland in 1965.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah.
When was Drew Carey born?
Probably in the 60s.
Why don't you have dual citizenship with the states?
Because I started in 2016, and then after the election, gave up, and I was like, I'm going to sit this out for a bit.
Oh, okay.
<There you go. laughs> I had only thought about it when in 2016. I was like, it's always been on my list of things to do. I had a good job at the time that had an office in the States, so I had started looking into it. And then after the election, I was just like, fuck this, maybe I'll wait.
We'll put it on pause for a bit.
Yeah, put this on pause.
Put a pin in that one.
But I am entitled to dual citizenship still, so I will get it eventually. And so, then the IRS can come and try and get taxes from me.
So, Peter, let's really dig in here. What happened in 2016 that made you so averse to the whole process?
Prey came out, and I was really busy up in Canada.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, yeah.
Right. I was really busy playing Prey. So
something about Prey and Predators. Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. Ellison, while he was young, I love this little part about his life. He took on a series of really fucking weird, odd jobs up until he was 18, including but not limited to a door-to-door brush salesman, which whatever the fuck that means.
Well, you're not going to open up a brush store.
I guess not in the 40s. You wouldn't do that, right?
Like, yeah.
No one's going to come and get brushes. It's ridiculous. We need to send out teenage boys.
People will make do with rags and sponges unless you bring the brush to them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I wonder what kind
of brush. Are you still using an old rag on a stick?
Yeah. Toothbrush, hairbrush.
Shoe brush?
Like snow brush for your car. Shoe brush.
Maybe.
I don't know how many cars people would have had in the 40s.
When was the Model T created?
In the 30s, so.
Yeah, but the Model T was also like a box with four bicycle wheels, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, it had a windshield.
Did it?
Yeah, for sure.
It didn't have a roof. I think your least of your concerns would be a fucking snow brush. No, you need a shovel, wouldn't you?
I'm pretty sure the Model T had a roof. I'm looking it up. Jamie, pull up the clip.
Yeah, Jamie, pull up the clip. Right.
It had like a little convertible roof, actually.
Yeah. Okay. So the brushes are unknown. He was also a tuna fisherman, a hired gun for an insane rich man.
I don't want to dig in my heels here so early on in the episode. Is there a lot of tuna fish in the Cleveland River?
It was in Louisiana.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, he moved around, but it was around. In Louisiana.
Went with the tuna. I didn't know there was a lot of tuna fish in these swamps of Louisiana either, so.
Didn't know either. Yeah, he was 18, he had these odd jobs.
You get like a can of tuna. It looks so small, but the tunas, they're really big.
They're big fish. Big fish.
You got to cut them up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, 200 pounds, something like that?
More.
Or bigger. They're gigantic.
A thousand. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus.
They're massive. So bigger than a horse.
Yeah. So he was a tuna fisherman, not in Ohio. He was a hired gun for an insane rich man.
A Pinkerton Light, I guess.
I guess. nitroglycerin truck driver. and a floor walker at a women's prison.
Nitroglycerin truck driver in the 40s is 40s and 50s is like a comically dangerous job. That's got to be least safe profession imaginable.
Like hauling a trailer with no suspension on a dirt road.
What the hell? Just like one solid axle, no suspension, and just a bunch of glass bottles full of nitroglycerin. What the hell?
And finally, a lithographer. And I have a little game for you guys. I made up one of those things. I want you to guess which job I made up.
Oh, I'm going to guess nitroglycerin truck driver just because we talked about it so much.
Okay, so do you want to recap, Jamie, or for the people at home?
Yeah, do a quick recap.
Because we asked you the question about the tuna fish, and you gave us a bit more info, so I feel like we should make it like the two truths and a lie game, where we get to ask you some questions to figure out which one you're lying about.
Okay, so let me recap the answers first, and then we can do that. So, door-to-door brush salesman, tuna fisherman, hired gun for an insane rich man, nitroglycerin truck driver, floor walker at a women's prison, and a lithographer.
Okay, what's lithography?
It's printing. It's making image, like lithographs are images.
Okay. See, you were very confident about that one, so I'm pretty sure it's not that.
I want to say nitroglycerin truck driver. I'll just say floor. Now, floor walker at a women's prison is way too specific, and so is the hired gun for an insane rich man. I'll say tuna fisherman.
I wouldn't put past. No. Go ahead.
The first one. I'll say the first one. Not a brush salesman.
You do not think he sold brushes. Okay.
I'm going to go floor walker at women's prison, because I think Pete is devious enough to go very specific with his example.
So Ethan is correct. He never worked in a women's prison.
Oh. Jamie almost had it.
Everything else was true. Everything else was true. The brushes, the hired gun, and the nitroglycerin, all real. Never worked in a ladies' prison.
So you say this was until he was 18, and you gave them in a certain order, which in my headcanon is the chronological order. So he was a brush salesman when he was 12, and when he turned 13, that's when he was hired as a hired gun for a crazy rich person. You know what I mean? Just a shotgun as tall as he was.
Yeah. You had to cock it with two hands.
Back in those days, if you're 13, you have a beard and you're like a man by then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, he would have been 13 in 1947.
Okay.
So just after the war.
Just after the war.
So anyway, that was a little game about Harlan's work history. His first novel was called Web of the City and was published in 1958 while he was doing 2 years of military service.
Okay,
he was at a base camp in Georgia.
That's the fake one. That's the fake novel.
He did write that book, though. That's all true.
Okay.
His talents did not go unnoticed, and he ended up in Hollywood.
Okay.
Great. Good for him. He wrote the screenplay for the Star Trek episode City on the Edge of Forever, which is apparently a big deal. I've never seen the show, but it's apparently one of the best episodes. And this is one of my favorite fucking things on earth. He also worked for Disney for less than one day.
Okay,
because
very good.
While in the cafeteria, Roy Disney overheard him joking about making animated porn with Disney characters and fired him on the spot.
Okay.
And my favorite thing about the Disney Corporation is Disney probably just called him like a Jew bastard and then like fired him for inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, exactly. Probably just made it all up about him, all libelous.
Yeah, exactly. So our topic today, like I said, is I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, which was originally published in March 1967.
Okay.
So it's very old. The novel takes place within the hollowed out tunnels of what is left of the planet Earth, at least 109 years in the future.
Okay.
And this all takes place 109 years in the future after the three free spaces on Apocalypse Bingo are all taken up and have destroyed the world.
Okay.
So the free space.
2076? Yeah, 2076. Here we go.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's Fallout. But
that's 109 years after 1967. Oh, yeah. So maybe Fallout is a nod.
36?
Maybe Fallout is a nod to that.
Harlan is not unrelated to Fallout, which I will talk about later on, actually.
There you go.
Anyway,
assuming my quick maths is right, and we're not just looking like assholes here.
The free spaces on Apocalypse Bingo being Russia, the U.S., and China. The three wise men of destroying the Earth,
I mean, it'd be hard to not include Russia and the U.S. when you're in 1967 talking about your superpowers, right? Like, kind of dominated your life at that point.
But it's very much like a more things change, the more things stay the same. It's fiction is all just the same two stories about the Cold War going on way too long. So in the time before the novel or the short story, the Cold War led these three countries to build what are called Allied Master Computers to assist and eventually take over managing warfare completely. And it is sad to hear that even the job of genocidal maniac is not safe from automation. So somebody call Andrew Yang.
Yeah.
Sir, a murderer needs his job back. Like, I'm on the case.
Yeah. Don't worry. Not in my economy.
On my old WoW server, there was a guild called Gang Gang, and their leader was named Andrew Yang, and he had the most insane gear in the game. It was interesting. Now they're called Hell Yeah Brother, but anyways.
Oh, that's like, what's that? That's fucking the wrestler?
Yeah. Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Is it the Slim Jim guy? No, it's Hulk Hogan.
Well, the Slim Jim guy is Hulk Hogan, but sure.
I thought the Slim Jim guy was
Savage.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Brother.
Maybe it's Randy Savage who says
brother. Yeah. I'm not actually up to date on my wrestling at all.
Did you guys?
I have never seen it.
Oh, I wrote Randy Savage brother to see if he said it, and it gave me the Randy Savage's like physical brother.
of course.
Do you want to talk about silly names, Peter?
Yes.
Yeah. Leaping Lanny Poffo.
Oh my god!
Is his name Lanny Poffo?
I like
it. Oh my god!
So
take that, Harlem.
Yeah, take that, Harlan Ellison. You were never the WWE. So it might seem cliched by our big brain modern standards, but in the 60s, the idea of like a AI waking up basically was new. So one of these three supercomputers woke up and gained sentience and then proceeded to integrate the other two computers, creating one massive computer whose circuits ran throughout the entire planet.
Okay.
Now, the size of the computers may be due to the fact that it was written in the 60s or might just be for dramatic effect. And this reminded me of a gag in The Simpsons that I had to look up. Professor Frink is like showing off the Frinkiac 7, which is like a computer that he built in the 60s to Apu when he was getting computer science degree. And it like barely fits in a gymnasium. And then he says that that within 100 years of the 1960s, computers will be twice as fast, 10,000 times larger, and so expensive that only the five richest kings of Europe could own them. So the entire Earth, like huge tracts of the center of the Earth, have been hollowed out and just filled with circuitry so that the Allied master computers could function, and now they're all one thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
They dug too deep and they touched each other.
Yeah, exactly. They get... Well, because you've got like the US and China digging in opposite directions, meaning their USBs happen to be facing opposite ways and then actually clicked and fit in together on the first try, which was their mistake.
Wow. They clicked right next to Satan's balls or whatever.
I was just going to say it, Jamie. That's exactly what I was going to say. For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, check out our Purgatorio episode or Inferno.
Inferno.
I think, because that was when they climbed down from the Inferno. I think it was Purgatorio, the beginning of Purgatorio.
But yeah, just skim over the Divine Comedy trilogy. Tell us where gravity is stored. So, now, since the unified Allied master computers started getting a little bit hostile, they started being referred to as adaptive manipulators and then the aggressive menace. So, this is Loreboy's canon. I'm pretty sure this was just Harlan Ellison desperately trying to work backwards for the name of the machine to be Am, because the whole it thinks therefore it am thing does come up in the story. And he's like, yeah, it's going to be called Am, Allied Master Computer, then it's adaptive manipulator, and the aggressive menace. That works. Those are all good names.
I mean, I'm gonna say 100% Peter, because as somebody like working on a science fiction novel right now, absolutely have done it. Absolutely have like had a sheets of a notebook just like with Rapture written over and over and over and try to come up with different acronyms for it.
Yeah, so it thinks therefore it am, and he was just like, well, fuck, that's a really good acronym, I'm gonna stick with that. So am, the unified global computer, having grown up on a balanced diet of digital warfare, went beyond pedestrian concepts like murder and genocide and simply killed every living thing on the planet except for five people. So every plant, every person, and every animal except these five is gone.
The five richest kings of Europe?
Yeah, the five richest kings of Europe. Exactly.
Me and Jamie are on a wavelength today.
I'm starting to think The Simpsons knew about this and just made that bit for it because it fits so well.
A lot of The Simpsons writers, I mean, back when I used to watch the show and like it, were incredibly well-educated, that happened to be very funny. So if that entire thing was just a silly bit, sure. I mean, Loreboy Cannon, Conan O'Brien read this and then wrote a gag for The Simpsons, absolutely. Exactly. So the reason he kept five people alive is because he had to ensure that he could take out his anger on humanity forever. So what he also did was render these five humans pretty much immortal and would instantly intervene if they ever tried to kill themselves. He's basically a god, and since he is built into the planet, he is constantly everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always
omnipresent.
Watching. Yeah, exactly.
Like a god.
It's almost like we will get to the limits of his abilities.
I wonder, what are these five? Like, is it like the cast of the Big Bang Theory? Like, yeah. who are they?
It's the Jackson Five. Going okay. to Mississippi, or going to Kansas City.
Yeah, Kansas he gave City, Michael the ability to sing, but not the ability to have a childhood. So that was the way he punished yeah. Michael.
Yeah. I want to say Bazinga, but I have no mouth.
Yeah, honestly, I would love to see the cast of Big Bang Theory imprisoned and tormented forever at the center of the earth. That'd be a really interesting Halloween episode.
I got no qualms with the cast, but the characters for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Yeah, the cast themselves. I've got a bone to pick with the guy with the glasses.
That yeah. narrows it down.
Yeah, great cultural reference there, Pete.
Yeah, it's like, I've seen a sitcom on television. I'm not just a filthy internet consuming millennial. Humanity, the reason, so this is kind of the reason for his anger. Humanity had given Am the ability to think, but not the ability to move around or enjoy sentience or be creative or enjoy it at all. So all it can feel is hate, not to mention it is just three armies fused together, right?
I know every time I have a genocidal thought, a nice, like, calming walk really sets me straight again. So the fact that he can't just go for a walk probably is probably what's leading to all this.
Oh, yeah. I feel yeah. very similar. That's how we started the podcast. We were both on our, like, decompress from genocide walks and yeah. ran into each other on the street.
Exactly. Yeah. Got to do something about this, huh?
In a dream, it manages to transmit to one of the survivors, and I will get into the character shortly. The quote is, "Hate. Let me tell you how much I've come to hate you since I began to live. There are 387.44 million miles of printed circuits in wafer-thin layers that fill my complex. If the word hate was engraved on each nanoangstrom of those hundreds of millions of miles, it would not equal 1/1 billionth of the hate that I feel for humans at this micro instant for you. Hate. Hate."
Okay, okay.
So, for reference on some of the measurements given in that quote, the sun is only 93 million miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And a regular full angstrom, not just a nano angstrom, is itself 1/10 billionth of a meter.
Okay. Okay.
So he's not a happy camper.
But he's open to working on himself and changing, right? That's kind of what I'm kind of reading between the lines here. And it seems like he's like, "Hey, help me be a better person and yeah. control my anger.
I saved five of you hoping one of you was a therapist."
I had no way to know. I had no way to know.
So throughout the novel, Am tortures his five pet humans with a variety of things. Rancid food, because he starves them all the time. They can't die. He keeps them alive, so he just feeds them rancid food, nailing their feet to the ground, and then causing month-long earthquakes, just so they just shake constantly for the entire month. And, like, actual monsters from legend.
Okay.
So, there's, like, a Bigfoot at one point in the novel, I believe.
Okay.
It's never seen, but the character that has the dream, like, can smell it and hear it and runs away in fear.
Okay.
And there's also, like, a Godzilla-sized hurricane bird, which is referred to as a rock
yeah.
or a Hresvelg.
Oh, that's the Mega Man boss in Mega Man X.
Rock?
No, the bird that shoots hurricanes.
Storm Eagle or whatever?
Storm Eagle, yeah.
Storm Eagle. Yeah. So the Rock and the Hresvelg are like from Iran and Norse mythology, respectively, and they're functionally identical. They're gigantic weather-controlling birds.
The Rock is a D&D monster. Can I just say, it's pretty funny, like the idea of him being like, "What's up, boners? Another day in your living hell. Guess what? Mothman today. Here you go."
Yeah. I would love that. So Harlan Ellison reads the audiobook and his voice is very strange.
Okay.
I would love it if one of the quotes from that fucking book was sup boners.
Sup boners, Mothman today.
Yeah, exactly. To torment them for a month while they're like stapled to the wall or some shit. You know, Am instructs the group to kill the bird at some point, but not only is it the size of a mountain, he only provides basic bows and arrows made of sticks and a water gun.
You really storm too. Yeah.
And that's when they learn that that water gun is filled with their own piss.
Yeah.
And they're just pissing into the wind.
Yeah, so like Am is a very petty god, right? I mean,
sounds like, yeah. Sounds like for something so hyper intelligent, not a lot of maturity.
Yeah, it's blind with rage. Yeah. And it's only 109 years old, so that's young for a god, I think, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't really think that any of them are real personally, so I'm willing to say none of them are older than that.
Yeah.
I think that, like, with its computing power, that amount of time would really mean like a lot more time in our perspective. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if they'd be able to run this like our lifetimes in a millisecond kind of thing. But
yeah, it fills the entire planet, so it can make immeasurable amounts of calculations per second.
But it couldn't even come up with its own monster. Like, it had to rely on folklore.
I think it wanted them to recognize it. Loreboy's canon, right?
Okay.
Like, I don't know why. It's just like, well, I mean, if I just make a thing up that's huge and makes hurricanes, they're not going to be afraid. I should make a bird that they're familiar with.
My data tell me that they're afraid of giant wind-causing birds, not giant wind-causing sandshrews.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
my Family Feud survey of the five people tells me that.
Yeah!
Top five answers is... Mothman!
It's the third one, though.
Yeah.
Bing! We surveyed 100 people, and when they were fed rancid canned meat, they said... Oh, I was throwing it to one of you guys, sorry. I was playing. What's his name? Harvey.
Steve Harvey.
Yeah.
Harvey Stevens.
I mean, next time maybe point to us or something.
I was pointing at myself.
That's true. Which is probably what led to some of the confusion behind who you thought was going to bring it up. I'll say Bigfoot, Loch Ness monster.
Oh yeah, fuck.
Rain, but instead it's fire.
Oh, is that a monster? I don't know.
Could be.
I don't know.
That's an Adele song. So maybe Adele is the monster that does that. That's fire to the rain.
Giant bird, giant Adele. It was a toss between the two. you have to kill Adele. Here's bows and arrows and a water pistol.
She said fire to my water gun.
Yeah, they'll be rolling in the deep for a while on that one.
So the short story follows the group of five on their journey to find cans of food in some ice caverns.
Okay.
They can't die, like I said, and Am just starves them. He feeds them once in a while, but like I said, it's usually rancid. They do eventually find the canned goods. However, Am makes the tins impenetrable, and in desperation, all but one of the group kill each other. Am can stop them from killing themselves, but not from killing each other. At least right away, which is why one is left alive. He has stopped from killing himself.
That idiot didn't even think that we'd kill each other. We pulled a fast one on him, didn't we, guys?
It's like when the germs kill the Martians at the end of War of the Worlds. It's like, he wrote himself into a corner and was just like, well, okay.
Yeah.
So now that we know a synopsis of the short story, it's a 40-minute audiobook on YouTube. I recommend it. It's very good. It's fucking weird. But it's great. So now we can go over the characters and cover the differences between the short story and the game. And then I'm going to recap the end on who kills who and who is left alive.
Cool.
I'm going to go in the order I played them, which was just left to right on screen, basically.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. The inability for the people to actually die is gamified. So if you die while playing, Am, who is again voiced by Harlan Ellison, he did VO in the game.
Oh, yeah. Good for him.
Just makes fun of you, and you restart his little game, as he calls it. So the whole thing is canonically... Like, the fact it's a 90s adventure puzzler is totally canon.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
What'd you do, idiot? Slip in the ice cave and stab yourself with an ice pick? Not on my watch. Oh, what did you... You idiot, what did you do? Slip in the ice cave and have one of your friends stab you with an ice pick? I can't fix that.
Well, or just like, whether it's like, use water pistol with Adele, and it's just like, nope, that's not endgame, idiot. and again, just because he's very classic here, Ellison wrote most of the game on a typewriter. Because in the 90s, he didn't have a computer.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So he had like a handwritten, like a typed paper script that he brought over to the dev Cyber Dreams, who also made another adventure game called Darkseed, which people might be familiar with.
I've always
That one has art from H.R. Giger.
That's probably how they mapped out computer programs back in the day, actually, is writing it on paper before they actually put it in the into the computer.
Oh, yeah, it must have been a fucking nightmare. Here's another little thing here. The game is hinted at being a sequel to the short story, because at least one of the characters references the quest for canned food as though it happened in the past.
Okay.
However, it is still 109 years after Am took over the planet.
Okay.
So whether he solved the problem that most of them were dead and then just did the game afterwards is unknown, but I can't even remember who it was. It's one of the earlier characters that I played mentions like, oh, this is worse than the time that Am sent us to the ice caverns to find canned food.
Okay. So
considering the game is written by Harlan Ellison, it's a pseudo sequel, like by the same author, right?
I'm willing to say official canon. Definitely a sequel. Am found a way to bring him back. And like I was jokingly saying, why would them killing themselves be any different from each other killing, you know? That just doesn't make sense to me, but
Another one of Ellison's stories, A Boy and His Dog, inspired aspects of the Fallout games. The entire movie's on YouTube. It's fucking weird. It is about a desert post-apocalypse where a guy and his psychic dog run into a bunch of like raiders and vault dwellers and shit, so there's a lot in there that could have inspired Fallout.
Little Mad Max.
It's like a sheepdog who's like psychic and communicates telepathically with the guy, and it has a very foul mouth. It's a fucking trip. It's on YouTube though. I watched like delightful. 30 seconds of it. I was like, what the hell is happening? And there's also a cute children's puzzle game on the Wii called A Boy and His Blob. So somebody got real fucking disturbed by that story and was just like, I think I could cheer this up a bit and sell it to Nintendo.
The blob still has a terribly foul mouth.
Yeah, it's a foul mouth blob that communicates telepathically with a young boy.
In the desert where they're constantly preyed upon by sand raiders.
Yeah. So overall, the game is a simpler point-and-click adventure because I actually managed to fucking finish it.
Okay.
I'm not good at these things. It is buggy, though. I got the GOG version. Sometimes, so the backgrounds are static. They're just images.
Yeah.
And, like, your character moves and things you can interact with are removed from the background. Sometimes these things don't actually appear. So puzzle items don't appear on screen, and sometimes even my characters were invisible. If you at home are having this issue because you listen to this and want to play it or got stuck because, like, for me, the first section, one of my puzzle items was gone, so I had to look up a guide, and I was like, what the fuck? It just wasn't there. And sometimes your character just disappears. Save, and then load immediately, and everything just reappears.
Yeah.
Don't leave the screen. Just save where you're standing. Load. Everything's back on screen. It's all good. So the first character on the left, when you go to the character select, is a man named Gorister.
Good name.
So he's the first one I played as. In the book, he is described as being anti-war, he's a pacifist, and a communist. So very Vietnam-era hippie guy.
Okay.
All right.
How do you retain any type of personality after years of torture? Well, that's amazing.
I was going to say, like, 109 years after AM took over the planet, what wars has he even seen other than the war against the giant supercomputer? And why would you be anti that when it's now torturing you constantly?
Am modified him psychologically to be apathetic and listless and without a care for anything at all.
Damn.
So he took away all of his passion and motivation for everything.
The ultimate torture is he made him depressed.
Yeah, basically. So, Harlan Ellison was an activist. He was in the Selma March with Dr. King.
Okay.
In the 60s, he participated in that march.
Good for him.
So, yeah, so he was most likely anti-war, anti-Vietnam.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was a communist. He definitely did not like the Cold War, what with the whole apocalypse story that he wrote here.
Fair.
But that part I don't know. I didn't look up his leanings. It wasn't as obvious as the guy who wrote Starship Troopers. Yeah. Whose name I have since forgotten because I'm a dumbass.
Yeah, Ellis Harlinson.
Ellis Harlinson, yeah. His name was Ethan Miller. He wrote... M modified him psychologically to be the exact opposite of what he was. The first paragraph of the book opens to find the four people find Gorister's corpse hanging upside down, suspended from a pallet by his right foot. Completely drained of blood with a huge slit across his throat underneath his jawbone.
Yikes.
However, don't worry, guys. This was just a cheeky YouTube prank from Am because the real living Gorister just like shows up to see what everybody's looking at.
Hey, guys, what's up? Oh, God.
Yeah. He is understandably horrified and, funnily enough, does throw up in the novel.
Oh, yeah.
From seeing his own corpse.
There you go. I mean, wouldn't you? Like,
yeah,
especially in, like, such a gruesome manner.
Yeah, like, and also, like, what's the point? Am just hates people, right?
Yeah.
He's just very mad.
I'm looking pretty thin there with all that blood out of me.
That's
a nice depiction of me, you know.
Damn, summer ice cave bod, anyone?
So if Am had not taken his ability to care, he'd probably be jealous of his own corpse.
Wow.
Remember, they can't kill themselves.
They want to.
And they found out because they've all tried.
Yeah.
Yeah. He often recounts the story of how Am... Oh, yeah, excuse me. I'm rereading my own sentence here. Gorister often recounts the story of how Am came to be at the request of other members of the group. So it's like the only story left on the planet is, well, this is how the whole planet got wiped out.
Oh, this one again?
Yeah.
In the game... So all the characters are very different in the game because the game is longer than the short story. In game, he was a long haul truck driver. He neglected his wife to the point where she fell into a deep depression and was eventually committed to an insane asylum. Gorister's section starts with him in like a ship cabin with a porthole.
Okay.
And if you look out the window, it's one of the first things you can interact with is like use window. You can see you're actually in a gigantic Zeppelin. And then when you find the control room or the engine room, you see that the Zeppelin is like powered by these fucking electrodes that are jammed into the skulls of animals.
Damn.
And then metal. If you flick the switch, it electrocutes the animals and powers up the engines.
But why?
Because Harlan Ellison is a psychopath.
But why?
But why, though? It's mostly domesticated animals. It's like you can hear birds, dogs... It's like they're silhouetted in cages when you zap them.
Okay.
Because you have no idea what anything's going to do. You just like click use and you click the switch and then Gorister reacts like, oh my God, these animals are being tortured to death. And it's just like, you see the silhouette of like a monkey and a cat and a dog and some birds and shit, like just all in cages. And that's how the Zeppelin is powered.
And not just any cat and dog. That's Spot. That's your beloved childhood dog. Oh my God, Mittens the kitten? Is that you?
Aw. So after some classic 90s exploration, clicking on random shit that may or may not have been fucking on screen this whole time, you find a few items. The important ones are a knife, a gun, and Gorister's heart. His heart now has a compass installed in it.
Good.
And it's been obviously plucked out of his chest. And in this case, mounted on like the frontal antenna needle thing of the Zeppelin. So the compass in it is guiding the Zeppelin itself.
Damn. To his true desires.
Exactly.
Which, surprisingly enough, is just eggplant. He's just looking for some eggplant.
Yeah, you land in a Greek dude's garden, grab some eggplants, and the game ends. Yeah.
You'd think it was self-annihilation, but turns out, aubergine.
So he lands the airship at a greasy roadside diner, probably for some fried eggplant, and he meets his old father-in-law, as well as a talking coyote. one of these things is not like the other, I guess.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Eventually, you can use the knife to murder your father-in-law and cut out his heart and feed it to the coyote.
Okay.
The coyote then reveals where you can find both your wife, Glynis, and your mother-in-law, Edna. You have to go into the washroom of the diner, flush three times, and then you get transported to a meat locker where they're both tied up on hooks.
Yikes.
What is this Alice in Wonderland horror story?
Yeah, right?
Crazy. Yeah.
It's kind of Saw-esque, right? Like,
yeah, it's so fucking weird, too. I mean, it's just, it's insane, right? It's revealed by Edna, who just has a complete psychological breakdown, that she had actually been tormenting Glynis while Gorister was away to try and get her daughter to leave him because she just hated Gorister.
Mm-hmm.
So
no daughter of mine is going to be with a long-haul truck driver in the apocalypse.
I mean, this is pre-apocalypse. None of these people are real, right? Yeah. Except Gorister.
Yeah.
This led to her being committed and Gorister attempting suicide because he blamed himself when it was actually
the stepmom,
Edna, who had been abusing Glynis, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, Gorister in this section learns to leave the past behind and not feel guilty about giving Glynis by giving Glynis a proper burial. So the shovel was one of the items that did not appear for me. Like the coyote straight up tells you, he's just like, well, Gorister, you just need to bury the past and then you can fly the Zeppelin over those mountains. And I'm like, I need a fucking shovel because you can see that you can interact with the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
The shovel did not appear. So that was when I had to look up a guide and found out about the things don't appear bug.
Up till this point, it's not like, it could be not a shovel. Maybe you have to rip out your own tongue and fashion it into a shovel or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely fucking bonkers. Yeah. Yeah.
Scream your regrets at the ground and it'll open up for you.
Yeah.
Come on, Gorister, just use your heart. Just like beating your own severed heart against the ground, trying to dig a hole.
So he gives Glynis a proper funeral, and then he takes Edna into the back into the engine room of the Zeppelin, and you learn that the machine that powers the engines is called the Motivator, the thing that the animals were all hooked up to.
Okay, yeah.
You live every man's dream, and you hook your mother-in-law up to the Motivator and use her to power the Zeppelin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So these aren't real people then? Or this is pre-apocalypse?
How's
this
no, working? Yeah. In the game, you have to use real people. So you actually have to shock your own mother-in-law to get the thing to work.
Yeah. It's all fake.
Yeah, okay. Like, so it's like carbon copies of who it was and like with a healthy dose of LSD to Gorister. Yeah. Like,
M is pulling things from Gorister's memory and putting them in front of him just to see how he reacts.
Yeah. Okay.
If you successfully escape, he does have lines of dialogue that's like, oh, I didn't really expect you to do that. And again, if you die or just there, the gun you can use to kill yourself. And then he just teleports you away and makes fun of you for being a pussy. And he's like, oh, that's not how you beat this game, idiot. Start over. In the way it's kind of like a roguelike where you, like, because we've all been playing Hades. When you die in every death, in quotes, is canon in I Have No Mouth. You just restart and you know where to go and grab shit. So you can beat the puzzles a lot quicker.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, because it's all fake and Am doesn't let you die.
Right.
So next on screen is Helen. It's the only woman in the group. In the book and in the game, she's described as only having had sex twice before the time where the stories take place.
Weird.
Yeah. Specific. But in both cases, she's just reserved. Like, she's married in the game, she gets married.
Okay.
And then the world ends shortly thereafter. And in both cases, in the game and in the book, she is a middle-aged black lady from the southern U.S.
Okay.
So she has, like, a southern, like, Louisiana accent in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And in the audiobook read by Harlan Ellison, he kind of does his best to do a vague woman.
Oh, beautiful. That's beautiful.
It's just like, he probably watched Gone with the Wind, and he's like, well, I just don't know rightly what to do here. I just want some canned peaches and shit. Like, yeah. However, in both cases, prior to the end of the world, she was goal-oriented, motivated, and successful. So she's said to have been successful in the book. That's not explained. She is a computer engineer in the game, though.
Okay.
Like, that is confirmed. She worked downtown Manhattan.
Okay, cool. Good for her.
So, that being said,
What was she doing downtown Manhattan? She's selling brushes? Was she working security at a prison? Or what was going on?
She was a murderer for a rich guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very successful.
Nice. From the bayou to the big leagues, huh?
Yeah. Bayou up to the Hudson. That's where all Louisiana women want to go. In the book, because her kind of like reserved sexual attitude was what the way she was in life, in the book, Am manipulates her mind to make her the thirstiest woman on the planet.
Okay.
And is then forced by Am to have sex with the four men in the group.
Yikes.
None of them get to enjoy it, naturally, because it's all torture.
Yep.
She gets no pleasure from it, except with Benny, who we will talk about next. And at one point, when Am causes an earthquake, she falls into a ravine and is partially crippled before the end of the novel.
Good.
Yeah. In game, she is transported to a massive, like, South American-styled step pyramid. Uh-huh. That's all made out of, like, technological waste, so just crushed computers and metal and wiring.
Sure.
What are you doing, Step Pyramid?
Help me, Step Pyramid, I'm stuck. Look up a guide on Steam. So inside the Step Pyramid, we discover that she has, like, a unknowable fear at this time of just the color yellow. Okay. And like yellow is often referred to used with cowardice. Exactly. The yellow lanterns in DC represent fear, as far as I know.
Okay, sure.
There's a green lantern, yellow lantern, indigo lantern. Like, they all represent some shit.
I thought you were talking about the District of Columbia, and I was like, I don't know what lanterns you're talking about in Washington, D.C. that have the symbolism of fear attached to them, but sure.
Vote third party, guys. Yeah, yeah. Third party for the yellow lanterns. Yeah.
Not Parthenax, but Parallax. Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
That was from the Ryan... and this is maybe sacrilege to some of our comic book fans out there. The only Green Lantern exposure I've had is the Ryan Reynolds movie, so...
I haven't been exposed at all, and not to that, thankfully. Right, so yeah, yellow, cowardice, and with fear that she's afraid of the color yellow.
Right.
After some puzzle solving, it is revealed that back in the year 2012, while she was working as a computer engineer, a man dressed in a yellow janitor's outfit raped her in an elevator.
Ah, I see. Yeah, I would do it.
Yeah, he had used his janitor outfit to do this in multiple offices around Manhattan, just posing as the concierge, and then he would assault women in the elevator. So this explains the fear of yellow in her section. Though, obviously, because you have to win the game, she does manage to overcome this fear, because there's like a pile of yellow rags in an elevator at the time, and she starts to remember like this situation, despite the fact it's over a century ago that it happened.
Yeah.
She uses a chalice from a previous puzzle to actually bash the guy's head in, and then he dissolves back into rags. So she does like kill the fear of abuse from the past physically within Am simulation.
Okay.
So she overcomes her fear of yellow, so you can solve, there's just a big yellow room that you need to get into. That's kill your rapist to get into the next room is the puzzle.
Yeah.
That's the puzzle. Yeah. Anyway, eventually she gets along and she escapes the pyramid through a sarcophagus.
Okay.
That's like a second secret elevator.
Good for her.
Next will be Benny. Mm-hmm. He differs probably the most from the book and in the game. Definitely personality-wise and a little bit physically, which I'll get into.
Okay.
In both, he used to be well-spoken and handsome. Just like a very nice, well-spoken, well-put-together, intelligent man.
Charming young debutante.
As punishment for this, how dare he, Am has twisted him into like a hunched over caveman thing. In the story, he can still speak. However, it's really simple and he's completely insane.
Okay.
Like, it's very much like me caveman ugh sort of stuff that he is, like how he communicates.
Confused unga bunga.
Exactly. Yeah.
I wonder if that would give you like more comfort if you were being tortured all the time to like not be as smart to be able to think about it as
not
much.
As,
like,
be as aware of it.
Yeah.
He's kind of portrayed in the book as very animalistic, so he has very primal fear. Like, he does still get terrified of things. So, but like in a much more primal sort of way. So he doesn't rationalize it at all. He is very hot and cold, as cavemen probably were.
It's possible that the sentience is there too. It's just like outward expression that is like reduced.
That'd be even worse. Yeah.
Which is interesting because that's the route that they went in the game.
Oh, yeah.
So in the book, the narrator is actually jealous of Benny being insane because the narrator thinks he himself is in a clear state of mind, and that's his torture, is to be completely aware of everything that's going on. All the hurricane birds, all the Adele music, all of the being nailed to an earthquake sort of shit. Like, he's fucking there, and he remembers all of it.
The curse of salience.
Yeah, exactly. We can all probably relate to that, too.
2020? Yeah.
Yeah, 2020, baby. So, in-game, Benny cannot speak out loud. He can kind of just like hoot and point at things. So he kind of goes like, "Ooh," and like points. It's like the only voice line that he does to other characters.
Okay.
However, all of his dialogue is an internal monologue. So in the game, he's completely sane, which does play into your theory of like maybe he's awake inside the caveman.
Yeah.
In the game, he totally is.
Okay. I mean, considering the fact that the game is written by Harlan Ellison, I'm willing to say Loreboy's canon, it's intended for him to be that way in the original short story.
Yeah. Harlan's dead now, rip, so we're the only updates to the story you're going to get, baby.
Exactly, yeah. Who else is going to continue it? His estate? Come on.
Yeah. Maybe you should have lived longer, idiot. Being born in the 30s really got to you, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he could appreciate the idea of not living forever.
Yeah, I think immortality is probably, being torture is one of the themes here, considering it's the thing that made Am crazy in the first place. Yeah. So the other major change from the story is that in the short story, he was gay.
Okay.
And Am punishes him for this by forcing him to have sex with Helen.
Right.
And he's the only one that she enjoys having sex with. Well, enjoys, whatever. Sure, like, it's all torture by Am. The Monkey Man also has a gigantic, like, horse-sized penis in the short story. He has a gigantic cock.
Oh, my God.
So, understandably, the gay Monkey Man with the 12-inch steak and cheese was not going to fucking fly in the 1995 adventure video game.
Yeah, fair.
So he was changed to be a Vietnam veteran.
Okay.
So something else that Harlan Ellison clearly thought that needed some commentary on, he changed to Vietnam. So he both murdered and left behind several of his own men.
Dude, what is it with like male authors and writing if there's one female character and a bunch of male characters? Like Stephen King with It. He made all the boys have sex with the one girl in the sewers.
But that was for power to beat the monster.
But he goes on for pages the girth of one of the boys and things like this. Just like the monkey with the steak and cheese or whatever you said.
that was a lot of cocaine.
Steak and cheese. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I like to think that in a pitch meeting, they were just like, "Mr. Ellison, this gay Monkey Man thing is not going to fly. Could you make it like a little more subtle?" And it's like, "Well, what? Like, he's a professional athlete?" Like, no. Yeah, yeah. Even more subtle. Like, what about the military? Like, yeah, okay, you can go with that.
Yeah. So Mr. Ellison, this character of yours with the 12-inch member, also a gay man, this is not going to be appropriate for children, whom we like to market video games to. So how about instead you make him a Vietnam vet who murders his entire platoon? That's like way more kid friendly for us.
Yeah, you know? In this pre-ESRB age, no one is paying attention to video games. I think we'd prefer that.
Yeah. But like, these authors could easily have just faded out and left us with the question in our mind and not having to picture a 12-inch member. But no, they need to dive in and go on a couple pages about that, you know?
Well, in it's just a throwaway line in the short story. It's only 40 minutes, and it's just the narrator, as he's describing the other people around him, does mention the fact that
I saw Benny's hog the other day. This is truly the worst day of the last 109 years.
I tried to hang myself with Benny's hog.
Am stopped me from killing myself.
Am just made it hard, so I couldn't tie it in a knot. Oh, heavens. Jesus. Heavens. So,
Army Benny from the game is sent to like a biomechanical dome inhabited by a primitive tribe of Stone Age humans.
Okay.
These people live a simple life, harvesting fruit and worshiping Am. Am has also implemented a lottery system where the villager who draws the black bead from the bag of beads is sacrificed to Am on like a mechanical crucifix.
Okay.
Yeah. There's another short story that I read in like elementary school called The Lottery,
yeah,
which was really inappropriate for children, about a small town where they draw a lottery and then stone the loser to death.
Wow. Spoilers for a short story written in the 40s. But
yeah.
Yeah, I read it recently, actually, The Lottery. But they still teach it in high school, in Quebec, anyway.
Yeah, it might have been in high school. I don't recall. I was very young. It's a very strange story to just be like, and here is a small town where they choose someone to beat to death with rocks.
Yeah.
It was actually the lady who was bitching the whole time, so that'll teach you to keep your trap shut, won't it?
Yeah. Ethan's engaged to a school teacher in Quebec, so I trust his opinion on this one that it shows up in.
She literally recommended it to me because she's like, this is a story that I showed my kids last year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Fuck them up, actually. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why. I want to steer them away from gambling. Now, I thought this was appropriate.
Now all they do is hoot and point.
Yeah. And one kid's hog. Jesus Christ. So they've got the same lottery system in this little village here. They all live in caves and just eat like peaches. Mm-hmm. Benny complains internally about being hungry the entire time, but naturally Am has made the fruit poisonous, so you can't actually eat it. Like, if you try and use the fruit, Benny just vomits.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah. He vomits out blood mostly, but, you know, it just shreds his insides. Classic Am.
Yeah.
Oh, this classic Am.
This is where the razor blades and apples myth came from.
Yes, exactly.
With Halloween coming
up. My neighbor, the supercomputer, put blades in my fucking apples. So, you do get to witness a sacrifice. So, after watching a woman get sacrificed, Benny discovers that it's all fake. The inside the women's remains is all just melted plastic and burned metal. The people are all robots. So it's all a stage, which does make sense because Am does say, I am Am, the great and powerful, before absorbing the sacrifice. So it's all just, it's the lottery, it's the Wizard of Oz, it's Harlan Ellison's old work. It's just, he goes to a cave full of like bookworm cavemen to watch them be sacrificed.
Yeah.
Over the course of this section, Benny befriends the woman's son, who is a mutated little boy who has three arms and communicates kind of directly into Benny's mind using a computer screen in the cave wall.
Okay.
He's like, the kid is your guide and you end up helping him.
Like the talking dog or talking coyote.
Yes. Yeah. Like a talking coyote. He's the Jiminy Cricket of this section.
Yeah.
Where Pinocchio has to feed Geppetto's heart to Jiminy to become a real boy or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I think that's how it works.
I think that happens in that Disney movie.
That's what happened to Geppetto.
I'd ask Harlan, but he got fired. Wanting to fuck Pinocchio.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. I wonder how many lore enthusiasts, like, their popcorn of sexuality popped whenever Pinocchio got eaten by that whale.
Probably a few.
Probably, at least a couple.
I'm going to say, Jamie, at least one.
Yep, me too.
There's no way it's zero. So he befriends the little boy who helps him kind of like solve things around the village since he's the only person who can understand him. Like all the other villagers do not speak English. And I mean, neither does Benny, and they can't read his mind.
Yep.
Benny steals the bag of beads and buries it in the graves of his soldiers that he killed and left behind. So there's also like a cemetery with Vietnam veterans at the bottom of this cave village.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that's where you hide the beads. I don't know why you do this, because he's like, without their beads, they're helpless. They'll never choose another sacrifice again. Like, they'll just find something else.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, Am will just provide more beads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like, aha. Yeah, it's like, aha, well, you stopped us from killing ourselves, and for some reason there's a limited amount of beads left.
Damn it, Benny.
They melted down all the beads for his circuit board, so that was the only ones left.
Yeah.
Damn it, how did Betty know that the bead factories were the first thing I got rid of?
Damn the girl guides and their colorful necklaces. Ah!
Oh, yeah. Boy, this totally straight Vietnam War vet sure got my number this time.
Hiding the beads does nothing. The villagers decide they want to sacrifice the mutant boy because they're prejudiced against him. Mm-hmm. But then Benny, Coco the gorilla, sign languages his way into being sacrificed in the boy's stead. Turns out, since the people aren't even real, they're robots, Benny is just teleported away, and Am once again reacts like, oh, well, I didn't expect you to do that. Learn the value of human life because you sacrificed all those guys in Vietnam, idiot. So that's how you beat that.
Okay.
In the book, Benny's a lot more animalistic, like I was saying. He tries to escape the center of the earth by climbing up like a spire of ruined machinery at one point. However, Am obviously knows he's doing this and like telepathically lifts him up and like spins him around in the air while like screaming beams of light shoot out of his eyeballs and like just melt his eyes out.
Okay.
So he gets blinded.
Just turns him into a Nephilim?
Pretty much, yeah. right, so he gets blinded by him when he tries to escape. He's the first one to snap as well when they can't open the canned food at the end. He jumps on Gorister and starts trying to eat his face.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good for him.
So if you're out there hiring new staff, HR people, just Monkey Man are bad under pressure. Don't throw away that resume.
After like a lifetime of eating rancid canned foods, a little face probably pretty good.
Probably pretty good. Bit. Human flesh probably pretty nice.
Passive face meat? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I shouldn't be shocked, but it's kind of flavorless. So next is Nimdok. This is second to last here.
Okay.
Nimdok is not his real name in the book or in the game. Am took his name, erased it from his memory, and just calls him Nimdok.
Okay.
In the audiobook on YouTube, narrated by Ellison, he has a German accent and is the one who figures that there's canned food somewhere in the Am complex. So the short story does not take place within the ice caves. Nimdok at some point is just like, I heard in a dream, or maybe Am implanted the thought in his head, which is probably a hell of a lot more likely. There is a store of canned food in some ice caves. It's 1,000 miles away. We'll have to walk. Doesn't fucking matter because we can't die anyway. Got nothing but time.
My friends, don't you see? I had this totally independent thought. There's food in an ice cave thousands of miles from here.
Well, let's go. I trust this guy.
Yeah. Sounds like he came up with that on his own.
Yeah. In the book, he's not very well developed. He often just like wanders off for unknowable amounts of time and returns visibly traumatized.
When you say he's not very well developed, are we talking about the steak and cheese?
Are we talking about the titties on this guy?
It is unclear whether Nimdok is stacked or not.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Don't know.
Good question, though, Jamie. Good question.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time talking about the development of the other guy's junk, so I figured we were still in the same realm.
It's relevant. It's, weirdly enough, relevant to the plot. Okay. Part of his torture. So no one in the group knows what happens to Nimdok, and neither does he. His memory might be wiped or something. And also, why this is his torture in the book is not explained. Like, you turn the protester into a guy who doesn't care. You turn the gay guy into a sex-crazed monkey man. You turn the virgin into, again, sex-crazed. Like, what he's flipping in Nimdok is unclear. Like, he returns visibly traumatized. Like, this is ironic, because in life he was never traumatized. That's all I do.
He used to stay at home with his supportive family, and that was just it, you know?
Now I torture him alone. It's the opposite of that. In the game...
He's forced to go get cigarettes twice a week and not go back to his loving family.
He's forced to be a deadbeat dad.
Yeah. Well, like, if his family was abandoned and thought that he abandoned them and he could never tell them that he didn't, that would be a good torture, but... Mm-hmm.
Wow, yeah, Jamie good at coming up with tortures over here. Boy.
Yeah. I haven't had my genocide walk today.
So. Yeah, right.
I see. That's
gotta get that out before the show, man.
Come on, you're right.
After we record, it's only 7:15. You have time. It's nice and cool. In the game, he is a doctor for the capital R regime. Running experiments on the Lost Tribe while trying to build a golem in a medical facility with very tall fences.
Okay.
Yeah. There are red flags everywhere, and not the this 22-year-old still kisses his mom on the mouth kind of red flags.
Nope.
Literal red flags everywhere with a little white circle in the middle and a dark black AM in a little triangle in those flags.
Okay, so he's a Nazi doctor.
Ellison is a Jewish author, so it should be really fucking easy to figure out what Nimdok is in the game.
Yeah, yeah. the golem, too, right, is from
folklore. Yeah. The Lost Tribes of Israel are said to be 10 of the 12 original Jewish tribes from the Holy Land who migrated out and integrated into other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Wikipedia. That's the first paragraph.
Sure.
Eventually, Nimdok finds a mirror in a pool of mercury and realizes he was a Nazi doctor.
Oh my god.
Gasp! And Nimdok actually sold out his Jewish parents to ensure his own survival.
Yikes.
Yeah, like, without a doubt, the most despicable character among them. Like, absentee husband. I mean, I guess the Vietnam guy is pretty bad, but, like, Nimdok is a fucking low point for, like, the characters. It's just like, well, am I supposed to be sympathetic to this guy? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Hard to find sympathy for Nazis, you know?
Like, yeah, it's just like,
short supply.
That's a weird twist, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's good that he's being tortured for all eternity, you know?
Yeah.
Is eternal torture really appropriate for anyone, though? Like, I feel like there's got to be a limit.
Sure.
Eternal? That's a long time.
Eternal is a long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you tortured all those poor, helpless Jewish people to the end of their lives, so the rest of their time.
I
don't know why you guys are being so Nazi apologists right now. I'm just going to take a hardline stance here.
To be clear, I just think that that's something I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, even. Like, it's
eternity of torture? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Fair. I agree with that. So anyway, that's what Nimdok did. Up until this point, though, Nimdok had no idea why he was at this laboratory or at this camp. He was mortified by all the things he was seeing and had like didn't want to do any of it, so he was being forced by the guards. If you try and leave the camp, the guard will just shoot you. It's kind of funny because it makes him kind of like a Mr. Magoo character who's just kind of like stumbling around. It's like, oh, guten Morgen, Herr Magoo, are you coming to the surgery later? It's like, oh, I guess I will. It just like kind of stumbles in.
Sure, hand me my scalpel, young man.
Because it's so fucking obvious the entire time you're playing this section, it's just like, it's a concentration camp.
Yeah.
Fucking obviously. But Nimdok has like no fucking idea where the because all of his memories have been wiped and everything just revealed in one line of dialogue. It's just like, eh! It's like, well, that's done. This is what's going on.
What camp? I'm finding it so hard to focus.
So, because Nimdok is unaware of what's going on, you actually help the prisoners escape and escape yourself. Okay. So you steal surgical tools from the surgery room where they're doing experiments on people, and you give them to people in behind the fence to like help them escape. You give them cutters and a scalpel and shit like that. So just because he doesn't know that he's also a Nazi at this point.
Yeah.
So he's got like the sympathy still because Am had taken out the evil, I guess, temporarily at least.
Yeah.
Just to shock him with his own reflection. So the prisoners escape normally by killing the guards and just running off into the woods. Nimdok escapes through like a wall of screaming faces, though.
Okay, good for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the hardest walls to escape through, I will say. In my experience, anyway.
So, and then finally, we have Ted. Ted is the narrator of the short story. He claims, like I said, to be left sane as torture itself. But is still self-absorbed and paranoid. Those aren't really flaws when you're being tortured for 109 years. Like, I would probably develop a little bit of paranoia. if I was being harassed by it, Adele that caused hurricanes or some shit.
Like, yeah. And then a supercomputer could implant thoughts into my mind and was constantly coming up with new stages on how to torture me with other robots and things like that.
Exactly.
It'd be hard to trust what you see.
So he and Ellen appear to be the sanest in the novel, and in the game he is explicitly in love with her. So like they kind of took the, or Ellison took that when he was writing the game, was like, well, like neither one of these people are completely mad, so whatever, they're in love.
Not even if you're the last sane man on earth, huh?
Yeah, not even.
I only want Benny's hog.
Steak and cheese. Yeah, she was vegan, so she's hungry for meat now.
Yeah, yeah, that's the flip.
Yeah, his story plays out like a traditional fantasy story. Ellen is cursed by her stepmother, who is a witch, and he needs to help her. He meets a demon named Surgat, who is from Christian mythology. He's a minor Christian demon who unlocks things and does the exact same thing in the game. You give him some of your own blood that you cut on a piece of glass by accident, and
he gives you a key.
He unlocks a door for you with magic. You meet the devil, who looks like a poker dealer, and an angel who just looks like Google Angel. It's the Philadelphia cream cheese guy.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. And he's got a bagel. He's got a bagel with delicious Philadelphia cream cheese, but you can't have a bite.
No,
if you do, it's razor blades.
Yeah. Out of reach. It's on a poppy seed bagel. It's like,
thank you.
So in the game, he's forced to have sex with the maid, but it seems like a less bad version of what everybody has to go through in the book.
Oh no, they're making me have sex with the maid.
Yeah, because in the book, no one really, it's like Ted's narrating it, right? So he has sex with Ellen in the book. It's not like a positive thing where he's like, oh, it's a minor reprieve from the tortures of the Am complex. It's never a good thing. It's all just part of the torture.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he has to have sex with the maid. And then you get into like an argument with her and she locks the door. She's like, help me. It's because you fix the oven. She's trying to bake bread. You fix the oven and then she fucks you.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Just like real life, right, Harlan?
Classic transaction.
How does she lock the door? Is it it only locks on one side and you accidentally leave the do not disturb sign on it?
Oh,
so then
yeah.
You're locked inside forever? Yeah.
Yeah, well, you leave it. There's like a tie on it, so you just can't go in.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's why you need Surgat. So Surgat unlocks that door for you as the puzzle, but okay. he takes a tie off the knob, so you know you're not invading anyone's privacy.
Gotcha.
Oh, good.
His character design in the game is that of a rich boy. So he's got like the kind of like higher collar turtleneck with the loosely tied sweater around his shoulders where they're like kind of flipped over each other over his chest.
Yeah, yeah.
He reminisces about boathouses and like other rich boy things. He like criticizes the kitchen for being shitty or whatever because he's in medieval times basically. He's like, yeah, yeah. Why this isn't rich people food? This is bread. Ugh. Like it's just that he's just like a pompous dick.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why his thing is like a traditional fantasy, because he's very classically like Prince Charming but not so charming sort of thing.
Waspy.
Yeah. Once he escapes, so he's at just the end of the screen. You can play them in any order, it makes no difference. So once he escapes, all five characters are then shown in unique cages on stilts, so they all get a custom cage. Very,
very thoughtful.
Yeah. Thank you. Ted's actually seems like the worst, because he's just in a cage where there's just like these like orbs that are all around it that just shoot fucking lasers at him. Like everybody else is kind of just in like a regular cage. Well, I guess no, Nimdok is in like, he's in like a body. He's in like one of the, like a Holocaust oven, but he never burns away. So he's just constantly in pain.
Well, that sounds also very bad.
It does sound bad, but I don't have a ton of sympathy for him, like we've already established.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Makes the first one sound like a fun rave, dude. You're like, lasers
going off.
Yeah.
Benny's is funny because it's just like a cage made of sticks that just has like a little wheel on it that has like these two counterbalanced rocks and just two sticks that jab at him.
Because you're poking the beast, right? It's got to be.
Yeah. It's just like, well, like I turned him into a caveman. I don't want to like put him in the laser cage. That would make any fucking sense.
Can I just say, Can I just say the laser cage with the rave going on? It's Daeryud Sandstorm, but the drop never comes for all eternity.
Oh, no!
He's
been on Molly for 109 years.
Yeah.
So once he escapes, you get to the final screen. So the Russian and Chinese AMs reveal that they're still alive within the system. So the primary AM we've been dealing with is the American one.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian and Chinese AMs contact you. They both take forms just to talk at you. I don't know why, whatever. It's a game. And each character can be chosen in any order to transport to the final area. And there are multiple endings. So for me, I chose Ellen because in no instance has she ever really done anything wrong. And I didn't know if there was going to be a limited amount of escapes. Okay. So I picture her first. Like, she's not a Nazi doctor. But she's not a rich dickhead. She never neglected her spouse. Like, I was like, she just got assaulted.
She's so first in line for the arc.
Exactly. Turns out that's not the way it works. And I lost her. She'd gone forever.
You were. Oh, really?
Yeah. Because now, if you fail puzzles too many times, you get electrocuted, and then you get teleported away, you just get zapped away, and that character's gone forever now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I don't know if she's dead or just put somewhere else in the AM complex. I lost her because I didn't know what the fuck was going to happen. I was like, well, she's a good person. She gets to go first, just in case there was, like, one seat on the ejector pod or whatever.
A good ending.
Just in case, yeah. Two seats, but one seat belt. I'm just like, okay, like,
what's the good ending in this torture porn that I'm playing?
There's like 9 different endings. None of them are good. Like, yeah. So anyway, the correct character to start with is Nimdok, because there is a computer terminal in the middle of this in the final screen, and the pin code on it is 1945, which is the end of World War II. Once you put in this pin code, you can extend a bridge, and that's where you get to go speak to the Russian and Chinese AMs.
Okay.
And you can also summon Surgat one more time, who is, of course, not a demon. He's part of the AI, and then you can communicate with him.
Okay.
I got 2 of the endings, because after I lost Ellen and then continued and got an ending and then reloaded a save and then tried to do it with Nimdok first, since I figured out, like, he was the 4th one I took.
Okay, yeah.
My first attempt, so I had 4 out of 5 gone, and then Nimdok was like, oh, 1945, and then I got to communicate with the demon.
Cool.
Yeah, and then just looked up the rest of them. They're all on YouTube, of course. The Russian and Chinese AMs reveal that there's actually 750 other people left, but they escaped the Earth and are in stasis on the moon.
Good for them.
You can apparently save them in some of the endings, but in all of my endings, the final character ended up the same as Ted in the book. So now we can get into the end of the book and the end of our little story here.
Mm-hmm.
So like I had mentioned that Benny can't handle the pressure and attacks Gorister in the ice cave where they found the canned food. Their struggle knocked down some large icicles from the ceiling. And in an attempt to save Gorister, Ted stabbed Benny in the stomach and killed him with one of the stalactites that fell from the ceiling.
Okay.
Everybody then realizes, just like, wait a second, Benny's fucking dead. He's free. We did it. So then after realizing this, and he doesn't have a whole lot of time, Benny immediately kills Gorister, who has had most of his face chewed off by Benny. So good.
Uh-huh.
Ellen, being also mostly sane, realizes what's going on, breaks off a stalactite, and pins Nimdok to the wall through his mouth with it.
Yikes.
And then Ted turns around and he's just like, okay, time to be the White Knight. Kills Ellen, and then right before he can kill himself, Am stops him.
Yikes.
And because he's godlike and not actually God, the one thing he cannot do is bring back the dead.
Wow.
So Am has one guy left, and as punishment, he transforms Ted into a thing that can never be hurt. As the ultimate helicopter parent, Am turns Ted into a, like, gelatinous wad that can only slither around. He remains aware, but not all the time. His inner monologue is the final paragraph of the short story where he's like, I don't know how much time passes between thoughts because I'm only partially conscious. He's just like this, like, slimy mass. He laments that he is too soft and slow to hurt himself. He's like one big airbag, basically.
Oh my gosh.
And he leaves like a trail of goo behind him when he moves. And classic. Then he's also just like, I have no mouth and I must scream.
Oh.
And that's the last line of the book.
That's the title.
And that's it. That's the book and the game and Harlan. It's all very weird.
Very weird. Very cool, though.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed it. I recommend both. It's cheap on GOG to get the game, and the book is on YouTube.
Yeah, I think I'll put the book on while I play some games later tonight, just see how it sounds from his mouth.
That's what I was doing.
Screaming
so
the whole time.
I've been playing a lot of I've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter, just trying to get to Fatalis, and I would put the audiobook on when I'm just doing like resource hunts and shit.
Nice.
Awesome. We hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thanks so much for listening, as always. I'm Peter's friend, Ethan. I'm sometimes on the show. You can find me on Twitter, at EthanTheDeadMan. You can find us at loreboys.com. Most of our contact is there, loreboys.com/about. And our contact is contact@loreboys.com. So feel free to send us an email. Feel free to get in touch with us however you want. How can we get in touch with you, Jamie?
Try to go to loreboys.com/about and see if you can find that silly old Discord page we have. I was just there today complaining about EA and 2K with one of our fun friends and talking about how we want Hollow Knight Silksong to come out. So lots of interaction going on in the Discord. So come on in.
Shout out to Fragile Shark. Peter, where can you, the host of Yield episode, where can we find you?
Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. And then if you want to suggest or maybe even buy a little bit of merchandise, go to loreboys.com/about and click the Tee Public link. New shit's added all the time. Sometimes it goes on sale. The support is fantastic. But if you truly want to support us for free, leave us reviews. 5 stars on whatever app. And you don't even need to write anything. Just high ratings ups our searchability. And that's way more valuable than anything. Even though a couple of little pennies our way, don't hurt.
Yeah. If you want to write something in your review, you can take a picture of it, send it to us, and we'll read it on air for you.
Take a picture of your own phone. That's how I like to read things.
And of course, the last and probably most direct way to support us financially would be with our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. We super appreciate all our existing patrons. Shout out to you guys. You're the real heroes behind this show. Head over there, check out our tiers, decide what you like. If you can afford a couple bucks, feel free to send them our way. If you can't afford a couple bucks and you want to, you know, make waves with Adele, you want to make hurricanes with Adele in Lore Boys land, you could just subscribe to our Lore Boys Prime. We're working on a very special initiative for Halloween for Lore Boys Prime. We are creating Mothman. It takes a lot of work. It turns out that his wings are made of human faces. So if you have any human faces just lying around in your collection of spooky Halloween decor, feel free to send them our way, and we'll consider it payment for this month's Lore Boys Prime.
We almost finished the last one, then the neighbor left the light on, and now he's gone.
Yeah, he went to our neighbor's house where the light was on, and
he got hurt.
Yeah, he flew right into that light. Yeah, I suppose that would constitute a Lore Boys screaming out.
Ah!
Ooh. Meatballs are stored in the balls.
Meatballs are stored in the... Yeah.
Ariane gave me the thumbs up, and she's...
She's a meatball doctor.
She's got a master's degree, so.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's, yeah.
I think that's
more than any of us. So, yeah. She got a master in meatballogy.
Meatballogy.
I had meatballs last night. It was quite good.
The meatball master.
I can poop whenever I want, Ethan.
You always could, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Go where you're standing. I don't care.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.